Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome. Good morning, my friends, to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for this Saturday, March the 5th of 2011. So glad to have you here with us this morning. It's my first time actually dialing in using a cell phone. I'm not at home. I'm on the road. Had a family emergency. So instead of saying I'm calling in from welcome from sunny Philadelphia, I'm welcoming you from Knoxville, Tennessee, where I am this morning, and very excited about the show today. Definitely wanted to move forward and introduce you to our amazing author who's going to be joining us this morning. For those who are tuning in for the first time, I want to make sure I introduce myself to you and let you know who you're speaking with. I'm your host, Denise Turney, and again, I'm coming to you live this wonderful Saturday morning from Knoxville, Tennessee, down here by Gatlinburg in the Smoky Mountains. And as always, I thank you for your support, and I do encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. That is my latest novel, and it is a very inspirational and empowering book that about a little girl who's orphaned when she's six in East Africa, and she goes on to become the continent's first female president. And you can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com, or you can go to any bookstore, ask the clerk for it, just tell them you want to get a copy of Long Walk Up by Denise Turney. They can order it for you because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And now let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf guest. And our guest today is an avid traveler. He is a blogger, a business leader, a father, and a husband. He earned a bachelor's degree from Grand Valley State University. He is the author of the books Getting There and Jerry Tales. And we are delighted to have him with us on Off the Shelf this morning. Who is this amazing man? He is the one and only Jerry Bolin. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Jerry.
Hey, Denise. You can just keep on going with all that praise. That's a great way to start a Saturday morning.
Oh, so good to have you. And I was reading up as I was doing my research for the interview. I said, wow, he is a guy who was like a free spirit. He does whatever his heart is set on doing, and I really admire that about you. Jerry, to start, when did you realize that you wanted to write? Because you seem to me, Your start seemed like more on the traveling and exploring and getting around and visiting different places. But when did you realize that you wanted to write? Was this a summer special event that happened that made you say, you know what, I think I'm a writer?
Well, you know, that's I think that's the question that tens of thousands of people who do write a book, and there's lots and lots of books that are written every year. The question that they face, and you know, I think there's an awful lot of people, myself included, who are storytellers. You know, we like to tell stories, and I think I've probably been telling stories, for good and for bad, since I was a little kid, and at about age 40, I thought, what would be a great way to be able to actually put some of these stories down in writing. And actually, I had an interesting situation happen. I had a young man that worked for me, and after 1 year of working together, we went out to dinner. Our wives and I went out to dinner, and he presented me with the Jerry Bolin Business Book of Stories, and it was all the stories that he'd heard me told in our business meeting over the period of a year. Now, I was flattered and embarrassed. Because first of all, I think he had just about every one of my business stories encapsulated in this little book.
Wow! Oh my goodness!
And it was a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek idea from him. And actually, as I saw that, I thought, these are some stories that I've been telling for a long time. And I think with any career, you have a sales shtick that you have, and you'll tell certain stories that you know will get a reaction. And so I started writing down some of the ideas for stories that I would use, and it took two tracks. One was a fictional track, and the other one were slice of life stories. I have four kids. I come from a family of six. And you know, you just can't help. All of us know that come from, you know, families. You just can't help but have some highly entertaining stories. So that was the genesis and the catalyst for me actually then saying it's time to sit down and start to write these stories as opposed to just telling them.
Okay. Oh, wow. That is. Now, I've never heard that, where somebody took the stories they heard someone tell over the years and made a little book, and then that helped you to, you know, kind of put that seed, that thought in you that, wow, maybe I should write stories of my own adventures or things that you've experienced in your own life. How and why, Jerry, for those of our listeners who get a copy of your books, and I encourage them to, Getting There and Jerry's Tales, how and why did you, and before I go on to our listeners, then you'll find out more of the background. Of course, we're going to ask Jerry questions that our off-the-shelf listeners can learn more about. But he has led a fascinating life, and you'll better understand his next question I'm asking him after you read his books. How and why, Jerry, did you hitchhike? And when did you hitchhike so many miles across the United States and Canada? And was that safe?
No. The answer to the last question is absolutely not. But when you're, you know, when you're 18 years old and you're immortal, you know, those thoughts don't cross your mind. And that was, you know, really, I started hitchhiking cross country about 2 days after I graduated from high school. And you know, my background is, you know, I came from a lower middle class, you know, family. In Royal Oak, Michigan, and we had everything that we needed. I had a great family, and for some reason, you know, I just was not a very well-behaved young person, and I started hitchhiking when I was 18, and, you know, I'd have $15 in my pocket, and I'd hitchhike to Florida, or I'd make a decision to hitchhike to California, and, you know, I had tremendous experiences. But having said that, you know, it wasn't what I would call a very responsible route. It wasn't a route that was productive. I did get some great stories out of it, but I guess what I would tell you, Denise, is that it's something that I highly recommend that none of my children attempt.
I'm going to ask you that. I'm curious to say, what would you do if one of your kids said, "Dad, I'm off. See ya."
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because I found out years and years later, after I did all this hitchhiking, and, you know, it's a parent's nightmare. And if you think about it, you know, in the 1970s, there's no cell phones. I mean, there was, you know, I mean, you didn't use pay phones. You wrote letters. And so when I hit the road, you know, my parents didn't know where I was for weeks, you know, months at a time.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, I mean, I am, by the way, you know, the best possible son I could possibly be now to make up for all the terror I caused my parents as a young person.
Okay.
Catholic guilt is a powerful powerful instigator. But, you know, I, you know, my view is that hopefully my kids won't do it. But I found out years later that my dad actually had done exactly the same thing, had dropped out of school at 16 and hitchhiked to California.
Oh.
So
oh my
goodness. I'm praying that there's not, you know, a genetic trait to, you know, go off and take these ridiculous adventures.
How many different people would you say you met? This is the thing that I would say. Of course, there's the negatives. Two days after you graduate, you just take off, and your mother and dad are like probably frantic. Where is he? How many different people? And this is one, I think, one of the good experiences from doing something like that. I'm talking really extreme, different personalities. One person very different from the next. Somebody maybe really into the arts. Somebody maybe very intelligent into the science, or just very different people. How many different people would you say you met during the 4 years you hitchhiked from 71 to 75?
Well, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of different people. And, you know, the inspiration for, you know, my fictional book, which is Getting There, you know, and I always try to emphasize that that book is fictional, even though the inspiration was through some of my own experiences, you know, really was that, you know, in spite of, you know, the obvious dangers of the road, of hitchhiking, it was also a tremendous experience. And, you know, like most things in life, you know, there was, you know, an awful lot of strange people that will pick you up on the highway. And, you know, you after a while, you kind of, your danger meter gets finely tuned and you know when to not get in a car.
Okay.
But by and large, And I think this is just, you know, kind of a testament to who we are as people, is mostly it was people picking me up to get me down the road, or, you know, helping me out. They weren't rich people. More often than not, they were people with troubles in their own lives, and they saw somebody stand on the side of the highway, and they'd help me out. And I can't tell you how many times I would be picked up by people who would take me not just from one place to another, but buy me lunch, you know, take me to their house, give me a place to stay, give me a chore,
wow,
put a couple dollars in my pocket. You know, I mean, I had, you know, I had wonderful things happen. I had at one point a 1,000-mile ride, you know, where I stayed with somebody. I had this very, very incredible experience while hitchhiking to Banff and Yellowstone, Banff in Canada, the provincial park near Calgary, where my friend and I were stuck just outside Kenora, Saskatchewan, for 12 hours.
Mm.
12 hours standing, you know, in waiting to get picked up on a road is an excruciatingly difficult experience. And on the heels of that, in the middle of nowhere, over 1,200 miles away from our home, a car approached us that were two of the older brothers of our good friends. They saw us and picked us up and kept us with them for another 1,500 miles and paid for our entire trip.
Wow.
So you can kind of see the downside, the problems, the pain.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, you know, my experience has been, and of course the experience proved out in business and all over the world, is there's an awful lot more good people out there and good fortune waiting for us than there are challenges and problems.
Wow. I'm so glad you shared that. And because a lot of times when you watch the news, you would think it's more negative. But when you really pay attention to your life, it's usually maybe a few major negative events that happen in most of our lives. And a lot of it is, other than that, positive. But we tend to sometimes focus on the negative. But I'm glad that you pointed that out. When did you sit down? You hitchhiked from U.S., United States to Canada, 71 to 75, met hundreds of people. You had people who helped you, which you just shared with our off-the-shelf listeners. When did you finally sit down and start creating, getting there?
I started doing that. I am now 58 years old, and I started the writing process about 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like, Denise, I could give you, you know, I'll give you and the listeners a little bit of a, you know, a history of the difficulty of writing, the craft of writing, and how I found it. Because, you know, I started from scratch, and it is not an easy road.
But even this was a work of fiction based on some real life events. Did that not make it? How did you find it challenging? I'm thinking you had a lot of material already to work with to create this story with. How was it challenging for you?
Well, the challenge is that, you know, just as you become practiced at telling stories orally, you know, the craft and the art of writing, you know, is, you know, you can have a gift. I think the gift is extremely rare, but even those with a gift have to learn the craft. And
you
know, it's not unlike anything else in life, and I'm sure this, you know, had to have, you know, partially your experience. You know, you have to actually sit down and write the draft.
Correct.
And my experience was write the draft and realize how bad it was. and then after writing a draft, and I think we're all, you know, have a little bit of an illusion that we're going to, you know, we're going to write War and Peace in our first novel.
Yes.
And my experience was, as I, you know, I wrote, you know, wrote my first draft, polished it up, thought I had a novel everyone would love. And I actually hired two editors to read the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And both the editors, both were women, both were highly accomplished writers on their own, and did me a favor by doing this. And one gave me 15 pages of notes, one gave me a page of notes.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them said the same thing without saying it directly, which was, boy, this needs a lot of work.
Okay.
And so I went back to the editors and I said, well, okay, I mean, it was, you know, as I don't think there's, you know, anybody that can write anything that, you know, you can't be sensitive to this child that you're trying to birth.
Right.
And, you know, just like, you know, nobody ever tells anybody that they've got an ugly baby.
Right.
People are careful about what they were telling me about my manuscript. But I did ask him, I said, is this salvageable? And it was very, very interesting. They said, first of all, we don't want to tell you that. That's your decision. And I said,
okay.
No, you really need to tell me that. And which they did, and they gave me, you know, suggestions, very specific suggestions about what I would have to do, which included a very painful rewrite from third person to first person.
Okay.
So, you know, that's where I realized that the craft of writing, the art of writing, you know, it's not just being a good storyteller. It's the ability to actually put those stories to prose that will be interesting to the people that read them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's something I'm glad you shared, because what you said, I think for most of us, when we sit down to write that first book, and this is why a lot of writers get frustrated with editors and publishers who send them rejection letters. They just can't believe, you don't see how magnificent this is. You don't see that I'm like one of the greatest writers on the planet. And they've read hundreds of thousands of manuscripts, and they're telling you this for a reason. But sometimes they get it wrong, because a lot of people rejected J.K. Rowling's book, and look what happened to it. They don't always get it right, but that's a good point that you made. It does take time, and like anything, even if you have the gift, it takes time, labor. You continue to work with your craft and learn how to improve it. And people who are serious about their writing, they do that. Tell us about some of the main characters and getting there, and how much are these characters based on you?
Well, as I noted, Denise, I have four children, so my official answer is it's 100% fiction. It doesn't have any reflection on my life at all. Okay, now let's just hope my kids aren't listening. I think that we all write from our own personal experience. And so, you know, clearly, you know, inspiration for many of the characters in the story, particularly the main character, Luke Moore, you know, are inspired by things that happened to me on the road. Having said that, you know, the beauty of writing fiction, and I'm sure you know this, and, you know, I think it was Barbara Kingsolver, you know, who wrote the Poisonwood Bible and a number of other books, you know, that said that, you know, the beauty of fiction and the fun of fiction is that the characters do exactly what you tell them to do.
Yes.
You know, so you get the opportunity to, you know, make things happen in a way that can make it interesting and are outside of your own personal experiences. And I found that to be just tremendously enjoyable and fun. And so, you know, the main character, you know, comes from a very, very difficult personal life. Lots of very difficult things happen, including the loss of his mother early on, the jailing of his father, and just a, you know, a life that had become unhinged. Well, that's the complete opposite of my young life. And then, you know, Luke Moore, you know, begins to hitchhike, really to escape from, you know, the tragedy of his early life. And there I was able to take experiences from the road, which, you know, I had a lot of experience in, directly and apply it to the character and make it real. And so I think that's what fiction is being able to take our own personal experiences, extrapolate them to characters that we think are interesting, but if you have the personal experience, you can make it real.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's something that would make your story stronger. How long did it take you to write Getting There?
Getting There, from beginning to end, with all of the editing and everything that took place, 5 years.
Whoa!
Yes. Yes. Now, part of that is I have four kids and a day job. the other part was that was just part of the craft of the process. And the interesting thing is the book of short stories that I wrote, Jerry Tales, that took 15 minutes. And I'm exaggerating or underestimating the time. But that, you know, those stories were, you know, once I figured out the craft and once I put in my apprenticeship, so to speak, you know, the writing, and, you know, it continues to do now. I write a weekly online newspaper column. And, you know, it's 900 words a week. And, you know, I'll tell you, it's just not difficult to write that once you, as you know, get into the rhythm of writing.
Yes. Well, did you, I had to ask you this as I was researching for the interview. Did you actually hitchhike through the Great Smoky Mountains? And I asked that because I've been and visited those mountains you have to tell me, did you actually hitchhike through? And if so, how much of it did you go through? I mean, you definitely couldn't have gone through the forestry part of the mountains. Did you actually hitchhike? The Great Smoky Mountains go from Virginia to. Did you go through
the parts of the Smoky Mountains that I hitchhiked, and it's actually reflective in getting there, is on I-75. And, I did not get off on the parkway.
Okay.
I did not go through those areas. So, the one thing about hitchhiking is that, hitchhiking on back roads, not a good idea. You're using it as transportation. Now, I'm not sure if you knew this or not, but to promote the book, I last summer did hitchhike from Detroit to Atlanta.
Whoa.
So what I did was this is one of those things that you I should know better at my age. When you have those thoughts in your mind, often you shouldn't let them actually the words come out of your mouth.
Okay.
And the thought came to my mind is I wrote this book which has a theme of hitchhiking and travel. Wouldn't it be a great idea? And this is as I was talking to my publicist. Wouldn't it be a great idea if I, recreated part of that hitchhike? And wouldn't we be able to draw some attention to the story? And she said, well, that's the craziest thing I ever heard. Will you do it?
And you say yes.
So
oh
I did do it. I did it much differently this time. When I was 18 years old, I was traveling with next to no money in my wallet, no credit card, all of my belongings in my backpack. This time, I had a credit card. My wife and my youngest daughter, Maura, followed behind in a van.
Okay.
We stayed in hotels. But I actually did stand out there on the highway by myself and successfully hitchhike. I was going to try and go all the way to Florida. The novel actually takes the character Luke Moore from Sault Ste. Marie, which is where I-75 is at its most northernmost point, all the way down to Miami, where it's its most southernmost point. So the goal was to hitchhike from Detroit to Miami. It was 105 the week that I was traveling. And I will just tell you this one, I think, funny story is, so when I made it to Atlanta, and along the way we stopped in Cincinnati and we did some public radio interviews and had a television interview in Atlanta and some things, but I was standing just outside Atlanta and a policeman pulled up. I'm a 58-year-old guy, look like a 58-year-old guy. I'm standing on the side of the highway with my thumb out. Police officer pulled up, young enough to be easily my son, and he kind of pulled his sunglasses down and rolled down the window and looked at me and says, what are you doing out here? I said, well, I'm hitchhiking, I'm promoting this, blah, blah, blah. He says, no, he said, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And I said,
no,
you don't understand. I'm hitchhiking. He says, nope. He says, you're done.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the end of the hitchhike. But it was absolutely fun and enjoyable and challenging, again, to get back out on the highway after, 40 years and see what it was like again.
Yet how we change over time, oh, my goodness. Can you tell us about 1 to 2 key events or conflicts that happen in getting there that will keep readers turning the pages, 1 or 2 things that will just make them go, wow, without giving the book away?
Well, the key element of the book, there's two themes of the book. One is the main character, and the main character has to keep you obviously interested. And Luke Moore, is a likable young man, with a troubled past, and it's really his search. It's really his day-to-day search that he finds out on the road, and what he finds out on the road, and that's it's unpredictable. And in addition to that, there's an ethereal quality to the book, in the sense that. He had lost some key people in his life, and from an interesting, without giving away the book, there's an interesting way that these people continue to enter into his life while he's on the road. So, in the midst of an extraordinarily difficult life with tragedy abounding and bad behavior that young people can do, Luke continues to find his way through, for a life filled with hope and love and expectations.
Wow. What will readers learn about themselves after they finish reading Getting There? What will readers, maybe they're not aware of about themselves, What will they learn about themselves by the time they put the book down?
Well, I think there's two different audiences for this. You know, those of us that, you know, lived in the late 1960s, were growing up in the late 1960s and 1970s, you know, it was a turbulent time, and the rules for growing up were changing. And, you know, it was just a much more, you know, open, liberal, permissive era. And, you know, a lot of us got drawn into that. And a lot of us, you know, had experiences that, you know, were not necessarily proud of, but certainly glad we survived. And so that group of people, when they have an opportunity to read the story, it's a reflection back because, you know, we cannot help but have our experiences, good and bad, as young people that shape us as adults. Not necessarily things we're proud of, but also things we are proud that we survived and became responsible contributing adults. And I think that audience, you know, of people that are, you know, baby boomers that are, you know, from 50 to 65 will be able to see, you know, that era, that part of their lives recreated because all of us have made mistakes, maybe not as big as the characters. And the other group of people who I think, you know, would be interested in the book and interested in the characters and what they can see is a little bit of a glimpse into perhaps their parents' lives. You know, and the observations of, you know, there's two ways you can handle your past with your kids. Say nothing or fess up.
And there's
two routes, and I'm not saying which one is the best one to go, but you know, if you have friends and you occasionally have a Christmas party and one of your friends has maybe one too many beer, those stories get out anyway, don't they?
So
you know, it's a way, you know, again, on a fictional basis, to be able to, you know, demonstrate, you know, a point of reference for, you know, an era, quite frankly, that was, I think, very interesting.
Wow. Has anyone who gave you a ride while you were hitchhiking, has even one person read, getting, now they probably have, but what I want to know is, have they read the book and then contacted you and told you they remember picking you up somewhere? Has anybody read it and said, I remember you?
Has not happened, but what a fascinating thing to have happen. Now, probably by calling that out into the world, you never know what might happen.
Somebody will read your book and say, I remember you.
What I did do is when I did the hitchhike this past summer, anybody that picked me up, I gave them a card with my name and number on it and said, you know, you call this name and number and I will send you an autographed book. You know, thank you for picking me up. And all of those people did land up calling. So, you know, that was kind of fun. But, you know, that hasn't happened to me yet. Now I have an expectation. Thanks, Denise.
Okay. How did Jerry, I wanted to ask you three more questions and I want to start talking about Jerry's tales.
Okay.
How did writing, creating, getting there, how did that change you as a person, just writing the book?
You know, it was a great journey. You know, like anything else in life, you know, you really have to create, a discipline on, you know, if you really want to accomplish something. And this was as difficult and a journey from beginning to end to get this accomplished of anything that I've done in my life, just over a period of time. So, the process of putting this together, really, really meant a lot. And I have to tell you, you know, it is such great fun to write fiction, you know, and once you get into your rhythm, once you find the tone and the soul of the story, I just don't think there's anything more enjoyable from a personal standpoint than, putting, it's not pen to paper anymore, it's fingers to keyboard, putting that into something that's real life and when it's all done. So it was a wonderfully fulfilling experience filled with some incredible lows and, some devastating comments that in the end I put together a piece of work that I'm proud of.
Oh, very good, very good. And I love the dedication that you write at the front of the book for our off-the-shelf listeners, the dedication that Jerry Bolin, the author of Jerry's Tales and Getting There, which I encourage you to get a copy of, the dedication he wrote at the front of Getting There reads, "This book is dedicated to Kathy. She did rescue me when I was lost and continues to do so to this day. She has been my best reader, my best friend, and my true love. Together we made a life and a family, which is how this lost soul was found. I thought that was very, very moving. And I wanted to ask you, did you meet your wife while you were hitchhiking?
Well, it's I would have an interesting story on that, as you might expect.
Okay.
I met my wife, you know, and by the way, the working title for getting there was Road for a Lost Soul. And, you know, I always viewed myself from the time that I was a teenager through young adulthood as, you know, basically, you know, as I look back, a lost soul. I just didn't know where I wanted to go and what I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. And as a result, I struggled significantly during that period of time. Having said that, I was working my way through college, and it was I was very, very late finally graduating from college. In my last term of college at Grand Valley, I had an international studies program that was based in Sarajevo, Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got ready to get on the plane at Detroit Metro Airport, I saw one of the people that was from Grand Valley, and I knew nobody that was making this trip with us, and I saw this young lady get on the plane, and that young lady was Kathy, and we met on the plane ride over to Yugoslavia. We basically had our honeymoon in Yugoslavia, and I met her in June and married her in December. We had our first child shortly thereafter, and we've been married for 32 years.
Wow, that is so fascinating. Now, so you didn't know her at all when you saw her in the airport, or you recognized her from campus.
Never met her. Never met her. Never saw her. Saw her on a plane.
The same plane.
Made a point of chatting up this attractive young lady on the plane.
I have to ask you this because I've heard so many men say this, and this is a little getting off subject. But this is something I know a lot of women, because women are curious about men, men are curious about women, and we never figure each other out. But I've heard guys say, I knew it the minute I saw her, she was the one. Did you have that, or is it just something that evolved?
Well, I can't honestly say that it was exactly that, but I will tell you that from the moment that I first saw her and met her, my attention was held from that moment on. And, you know, I married a woman that I knew for about 5 months and started a family quickly thereafter. So if it wasn't falling in love immediately, it was darn close.
Wow. Wow. At the start of getting there, you say that hitchhikers, and I love this, and it made me think about even myself, but at the start of getting there, you say that hitchhikers wait for something to happen. Something exciting. Do you think that all humans wait for something exciting to happen out of the blue?
You know, it's an interesting world. There's so many different kinds of people. And, you know, when I was a young person, and again, I think young men suffer and benefit from this same trait where we just really believe we're immortal. You know, we really believe there's nothing that can hurt us. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, at that point, you know, there's a risk-taking mentality that you have, and that's, you know, that's what I was trying to convey there is the road is, you know, you could stand for 3 hours, you could stand for 6 hours, I've stood for 12 hours and nothing happens, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, out of nowhere, you know, you'll get picked up by a fascinating person or something dangerous will happen. And so it's that, you know, it's that expectation of waiting for interesting things that I can't say all people have it. We all have different approaches to risks, but
mm-hmm.
even to this day, I still enjoy the unexpected, and I guess that's reflected in my life and my work.
Okay, how soon after publishing Getting There did you sit down and write Jerry Tales?
I had some of the stories written, and really what happened was after the apprenticeship of writing the novel, I really just sat down and had some of these stories and then started writing some stories, and I had a list. And they really just, it was so much more fun because they just flowed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could write one of those stories in a day and a half, and, you know, first draft. And when I read them, it was, you know, I'd spent my apprenticeship getting better and learning how to write. It was just a lot easier task, as I mentioned before. So it was, you know, really right on the heels. And that was the decision was, is, you know, let's do these both, you know, very close at the same time.
Okay. How does Jerry's Tales differ from Getting There? And it sounds like, you know, I'm listening to you during this interview. It sounds like you are maybe were born a storyteller, and then you became a writer. But it sounds like you, like you said, that's how it started. Somebody gave you a book of stories that you told. So it sounds like you've been a storyteller almost all of your life. I wanted to ask you, how does Jerry's Tales, where you tell these stories, and are they fictional or nonfiction, how does Jerry's Tales differ from Getting There?
It really is completely, you know, completely different book. It's a book of short stories. You know, the tone of Jerry's Tales is humor. I mean, there, I would say, out of, you know, the stories that are there, you know, most of them are there to entertain you at the expense of the author, which is, of course, me. And, you know, I don't know if you know what the subtitle, which is, you know, Jerry's Tales, How I Lived Happily Ever After Despite Stabbing Myself in the Back, Stabbing My Cojones, and Really Pissing Off My Wife During Childbirth. So, you know, the tone is completely different. Now, there's some stories in there that will bring a tear to your eye, but, you know, this is really, you know, 40 years of life, really, I guess it would include all the way back, because there's a story in here when I deposited the baby Jesus on Christmas Eve upside down, hence the name of the story, Buns Up Jesus, at midnight mass. But the tone of this book is, let's have some fun. And that's, you know, it's really a storybook that anybody who's been married, has children, you know, will probably enjoy. I would say women more than men, because, you know, the scapegoat here is the husband or the father.
Okay. Your stories are so intriguing. And, you come across to me, just from what I'm hearing you say, as a natural storyteller. And I would say that because of the material in your stories, which is very interesting, because you are a risk taker, you've lived a life where you have a body of material from your life experiences that you could just simply reach into and withdraw from and create interesting stories, whether you're telling them verbally or you're telling them in written form. And so I'm imagining, as I listen to you hitchhiking from the United States to Canada over 4 years, the way you met your wife, as you talk about your Jerry's Tales, and again, the natural storytelling part that seems to come through, I said to myself, it must have been easy for him to land a publisher. But I wanted to ask you, is that so? Was it easy? When you sent out your manuscript, did somebody just grab it up right away?
Well, I'm going to tell you that both of these books are what I call high-end self-published.
Okay.
A fascinating process, and I know that you want to talk a little bit about this for people that are writers. So there's 500,000 books written a year. 500,000. And when I did the research on publishers, you know, as we all know, if you want to be able to get something, you know, what does Random House, you know, what are they selling? Well,
right.
They want to sell a James Patterson book. They want to sell a book that, you know, they know that they're going to sell, you know, 3 million,
yes.
4 million, 5 million copies.
Yep.
And so,
yep.
You know, I as I explored the route of what was the best way for, you know, a first-time author to get their book out, and
mm-hmm.
what's the time and energy that you're going to invest. So, you know, I tried for a pretty short period of time to go to, you know, the major publishing houses. And then what I found was, it's like I said, it's a high-end book publishing, and, you know, I'm fortunate enough that I have some resources to be able to invest in this. I made the decision to go with, you know, Synergy Books, which
mm-hmm.
offered me an opportunity to put together my own package and kind of control my own fate. And
okay.
So, you know, the beauty of what's happened in today's publishing world is you don't have to wait anymore
exactly.
a publisher,
mm-hmm.
you know, a traditional publisher, because
mm-hmm.
that wait could be forever. And
yes.
Really what you have to do is you have to build a platform of readership. And how do you do that? Well, you've got to create, you know, your own publicity route. You have to create your own, and it's not as expensive as it used to be because of things like internet radio, you know, and your show. And, you know, and the ability to use Facebook. I have a Facebook page, you know, Jerry Tales, where, you know, we're able to attract fans and we're able to continue to tell people about the things we're doing on The Hitchhiker. It attracts a lot of people. The publicity firm that I work with is a traditional publicity firm, Phoenix & Phoenix. They're well known in the literary world. And, you know, they were helpful in arranging all of the radio and television that we've done. So what I made the decision to do, and, you know, as I said, fortunately I had the resources to do this, was not wait. And, and it's been, you know, we talked a little bit about the, you know, the craft and the art of writing and how you have to put your time in to get good. The business aspect of selling books is 180 degrees different than the art of writing.
Absolutely. And that's why a lot of writers can't do both, because it is very different.
Well, and I think, you know, from your own experience, it does not matter whether or not you are you're self-published or published by a small publishing house or even by one of the major houses.
Yes.
You have to put the time and energy into this. And, you know, when I did my training with the publicist, you know, I was sitting next to someone, you know, whose book was being promoted by a small publishing house. And they her complaint to me was she wasn't getting the attention she thought she needed. And And the point that I took away from that is okay, so if that's not happening, then how do you create it yourself? And it's just a very difficult task to do, but it's doable. And, you know, in today's world, I mean, my kids are, you know, from age 20 to 31. All of them have Facebook pages. If you added up the total number of friends that my four children have, you'd probably have 3,500 friends. You know, and their ability to reach out to people on these books.
Right.
You know, think about that. That's 3,500 friends that can recommend. You know, I have this online newspaper column where, you know, every week I get a chance to say a little thing about my book. So that's how, in today's world, you know, you can even the playing odds without spending a fortune. It still costs money. But without spending a fortune, you can develop an audience, you know, for your books.
And you made a good point. Whether you go through a large publisher, small, or you self-publish, You generally, unless you're a big name author, you are going to be responsible for putting the money in to promote, and they're going to print it. Like a most major publishers, even they'll print the book. They're not going to put you on a 10-city book tour or anything. You're going to have to get out there and move those books, because I have friends that I know who are with major publishing houses, and they do a lot of work to promote their own stories. You'll have to get out there and promote your own story. So going with a major publisher for a writer, it doesn't excuse you from the marketing part aspect of you know, being a published author. You still have to do that. And there are many, many ways, you know, radio, television, press releases, speaking engagements, book signings, they say aren't one of the best, going to large events and doing signing your books. Those are some of the better ways to move your stories and to continue to write and publish fresh material. Because after so many years, the sales of even major best-selling books start to dwindle off after so many years. So you have to keep putting out new material. What advice, I know you took the route of the self-publishing. What advice would you give to off-the-shelf listeners, Jerry, who are listening to what you and I have shared so far, but who are trying to land a publisher? Maybe they're getting frustrated, or maybe they think it's easy. What advice would you give to them, even if they still want to go through a major publisher?
Well, it's, you know, there are, again, just because of the, you know, the era of the internet and the access to information, you know, it's easy to get the names of agents. It's easy to get the names of publishers. But when you do the research, you'll find that, you know, it is a lottery chance to get your book directly contacted through a publisher. You know, so the next step is do you want to find an agent? And then if you find the right agent, and I had the opportunity with a couple different agents, and by the way, I had all sorts of rejection notices from agents, but I had the opportunity to work with a couple different agents, and I have to tell you, I just didn't get the feel that, you know, for their cut, I was going to get the attention that I really wanted.
Oh, okay.
And what happens is again, like anything else, and you know, I am a business person by day, and so you know, I understand the craft of marketing. And what you really want to do is you really have to, be, in my opinion, be able to control your own fate. So if you want to do it, you can try and apply, because you really need an agent to be able to get you to one of the major houses.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I think what I've learned, the most important lesson I've learned through this whole thing is that in the end, you really do have to create a writing platform. And you really do want to be able to create some buzz for your book, and you want to sell some books. And once you've done that, then the opportunity to go back to what I'll call higher quality agents
mm-hmm.
improves dramatically, because you have something to show them. You know, you have book sales. You've shown, and this is what an agent wants. They want to be able to get an author that's not only going to be able to have a book that they're going to be able to pitch and sell so they can make money. They want to know that you have a second book in you or a third book in you.
Yeah.
They want, you know, I hate to boil this down to just commerce, but it really is. An agent's job
mm-hmm.
is to find and identify somebody who will sell enough books to make them money that'll be worth
yeah.
their while.
Because that's what the publisher's looking for. You hit the nail right on the head. It's not so much about the art itself. I think when the book publishing industry started years ago, their publishers would take a chance on somebody. You just wrote a great story, and they were willing to take a chance on a few writers and back them up. Publishers are less and less inclined to do that today. So they do want some proof that, and publishing actually a lot of, I'm hearing more major publishers, they want authors to start out. Not, I won't say want, but it's a good chance. You start out self-publishing, you sell several thousand or several tens of thousand copies of your book. They see there's an audience out there for it, and then they'll take you on. Because I've seen that happen with writers as well.
That's exactly right.
How do you see the internet shaping the book industry 3 to 5 years from now? Not today, but let's launch out as it continues to expand and technology continues to change and grow. How do you see it impacting the book industry 3 to 5 years from now? Because I've already seen some things, like with the e-books, that when I was a little girl, I don't think I would have ever thought people would be reading a book with an electronic device. But how do you see it changing the book industry over the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I mean, I think the fascinating part about it is I mean, what's begun will accelerate, and what's begun is Borders just declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Yeah,
they'll still be around, but in a different form. The publishing houses, everyone is looking how they can generate the ability to deliver content. Here's the one thing that won't change, and here's the author's. This is what's great for the author. In the end, whether or not it goes on, an ebook or in a hardcover book or whatever the format it's going to be, the content and the art still has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one thing. The delivery system is going to change, and we're all going to have to as authors and writers, we're all going to have to be responsive to what that is. You know, my books are all being put into there's a group called Smashwords. All those books, my books will all be in those formats, within the next 30 days, because they have to be. But what I think happens in the next 3 to 5 years, to answer your question, is it just accelerates. I had a coincidence to sit next to on an airplane about 2 months ago with a major book distributor, somebody who was in charge of their e-commerce division. And she told me that 8% of their content is currently electronic. In 3 to 4 years, they expect it to be 50%.
Wow.
So
yeah.
And, this is somebody whose living was driven around that. So I think that's a fair assessment. But again, what I look at it this way is, doesn't much matter to me whether or not my material is on a backlit nook or, in a hardcover or softcover book. In the end, the art of the author doesn't change.
Very good, very good point for authors and people who might be like the Who Moved My Cheese book. We might be afraid of some elements of change, which we cannot avoid. You made that clear. Whether it's the same thing in music, the content, that process is still the same. You still have to sit down and create the book. That's not going to change. You might not use pen and paper or a manual typewriter and use a laptop or a desktop computer, but it used, the author still has to take the material from inside themselves and create it in such a way that it intrigues many other people to learn about and experience what you have shared in your stories, whether it's fictional or non-fictional. Jerry, are you working on any new material? And if so, would you please give our off-the-shelf listeners a glimpse about what you're working on now and when we can expect to see it on the market?
Well, Jerry Tales 2. The stories will never stop.
Okay.
You know, the beauty of a life filled with mistakes is every mistake gives you a story.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a mistake and you have if you're not afraid to laugh at yourself, you're probably going to make other people smile and laugh at the same time. So that's the theme of what I'm doing now. And as I mentioned, I'm also writing a weekly column. There is, again, speaking to what's going on in the world, I write for a local newspaper, but with a national presence called Patch.com. And Patch.com is an AOL-sponsored community newspaper group that's really going to spread across the nation. And it shows
mm-hmm.
exactly what you and I have been talking about is, you know, many of the local newspapers are struggling as readership falls off because
yes.
guess
yeah.
what? My kids aren't reading newspapers. They get all their
mm-hmm.
content online. So, you know, you go to Patch.com, you go to Michigan, you go to Royal Oak, and you can pick up my column every week. So that's some of the writing that, to be candid, I love that writing. So that's the next thing that I'm doing, along with developing the next set of stories, which, you know, given the process of writing and publishing, I'd say they're 6 to 9 months off.
Okay.
But, you know, if I can take the opportunity to give the plug for where you can find my books.
Sure, please do that. Please do that.
So
definitely.
The both Getting There, the novel, and Jerry Tales, the short story book, are available on Amazon.com, and you can type in, you know, either one of those story names or my name, Jerry, with a G, Boylan, B-O-Y-L-A-N. And there is a website, which is www.jerryboylan.com, which actually, when I did the hitchhike, and I'm actually going to do another hitchhike this fall, heading north in Michigan to kind of complete the route. What I do is I blog from the road, the experiences that I've had during the day, and sometimes while I'm in the car with the people I'm with.
You, I wouldn't be surprised if I didn't look up one day and saw you on the Today Show, because I think the way you are marketing your book, it's so unique and different and creative in and of itself. Who knows what will happen over time? Who knows? I remember I read Paula Deen's book, It Ain't All About the Cooking, which I think was her second or third book. And, you know, you see people become tremendously successful and you think it was easy. If anybody sat down and read her book, how difficult and how the long hours she put in. She said all she was doing was working and sleeping. That was it. I mean, long, long, long hours. And somebody, I think from the Oprah Winfrey Show, came in to her restaurant just to get a bite to eat and saw one of the little books that she was selling. She might have been selling for like $3, $5. They were a little, like a book you could get made at Staples and just put
mm-hmm.
a stapler in the middle of the pages. And that's how she got on the Oprah Show. And she said after that, it was just off from there. But it just, like you said it's going to accelerate technology. Something seemingly so small turns into something so big. So I always encourage people to keep going if something within tells you you're on the right track, on the right path, stay on that path. Jerry, for those who are working a full-time job and they may be a musician or a painter or a writer, and they're wondering, how do I continue to do both? How do you balance, you, Jerry, balance writing with working in the financial investment industry? How do you move in and out of both these worlds? And how do you find a time to do both?
It's a discipline, and it's not easy. And, you know, it really depends on where you're at in your life. But there's one great book I recommend for all writers, fledgling writers. It really helped me a lot in the middle of my process. And it was written by all people by Stephen King. It's called On Writing. And it's a short little book. And it's, you know, Stephen King takes you through, you know, the ups and downs and the process of writing. But in the end, if you're going to be a writer, and I'm certain it's with any of the other arts, you have to sit down in a room, where there's no distractions, and it's you and the keyboard. And you have to spend, whether it's a half hour a day, 45 minutes a day, or an hour a day, whatever your time frame allows, and you have to sit down and do it. And the discipline of doing that day in and day out, if you can't do it 7 days a week, you do it 5 days a week, that's what takes you from concept to finished product.
Writers have to sit down and write. You can't. That's with anything in life. And I was discussing this with somebody. Whether we read the scriptures, go to church, we take in a lot of information and we think about a lot of things. But at some point, you're going to have to sit down and begin to apply what you've learned. And until you apply it, all you have is information swirling around in your head. You can't just think about writing a book. You have to actually sit down and start to write. I want to ask you next. You have already, and you continue to live, this incredibly interesting life as we come down to the last 4 minutes of this interview. I'm sure so many people would love to have you learn more about your books and your road experiences and have you speak before the organizations. How can book clubs, schools, I could just see you being wonderful talking to book clubs and schools and radio hosts and other people who would love to have you speak. How can they contact you to have you appear to speak at one of their functions?
Well, I do a fair amount of that, and the best way to do it is really to contact me, you know, through either the Jerry Tales Facebook fan page or my email address is gboylan, B-O-Y-L-A-N, at AOL.com.
Oh, that's easy to remember. You made it all so simple. It's so easy to remember. Please go over and visit Jerry Bolin at his website, Jerry, G-E-R-R-Y, Bolin, B-O-Y-L-A-N.com, and pick up a copy of his books, Getting There and Jerry Tales. And he said in about another maybe 6 to 9 months, Jerry Tales 2 will be out. They're also available on Amazon.com, and he's working at get them available in ebook form through Smashwords. Before we go, are there any other creative artists in your family? I had to know.
Yes, you know, my sister writes. Actually, probably all my family writes. My brother David writes a food column in California called Lick the Plate. Writing and long distance running. I'm the only non long distance runner. Kind of runs in our family. And there was one thing I wanted to say. First of all, you know, I hope your family emergency works out. And since you're down in Knoxville, I have a very, very good friend who I used to visit when I used to hitchhike, and just visited with Kathy, my wife Kathy, when we were doing our hitchhike down, and that's Helen Hewitt down in Knoxville, Tennessee. So shout out to, you know, all those down in Knoxville.
Oh, well, thank you so much. What last words of encouragement or advice, Jerry, would you like to leave with our off-the-shelf listeners?
You know, I first of all, thank you very, very much, Denise, for the opportunity to talk. You're very, very good at this.
Thank you, Jerry.
That was one of the fastest hours I've ever spent talking. So, I appreciate this, and I can see that, you know, you've put in some time doing this because it comes very easy and naturally to you. And, you know, my final comment is that there's great joy in telling your stories and writing. And if you want to do it, you know, then do it. Spend the time and energy, and you'll have a wonderful, enjoyable experience, which is what I've had. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And one thing I took away from the interview for our off-the-shelf listeners with Jerry, he did take risk, and because of that, he's learned so much, and look what has come up from his life. Sometimes working to live as safe a life as possible keeps us fenced in and keeps us from a lot of things. So I thank Jerry, and again, he's a man who's lived a fascinating life because he's had the courage to take some risk along the way. Maybe you'll see him on the road when he's out promoting his next book. Please stop in and visit him online, Jerry Bolin, G-E-R-R-Y-B-O-Y-L-A-N. You can get a copy of his books there. You can go to Jerry Bolin on Facebook and check him out there. Or you can also get copies of his books at Amazon.com, Getting There in Jerry's Tales, and look for Jerry's Tales 2 in the next 8 to 9 months. And please go over and visit me online at www.chistel.com. But as always, I encourage you to support our guests and support Jerry online, on Facebook, Amazon.com, and on Smashwords when his books come out there. And as I close, I always tell you, remember, you're so truly valued, so loved, and so incredibly blessed. Go out and create a fabulously good day for yourself. Jerry, thank you so much. I enjoyed you, and I'll shoot you an email.
Thank you, Denise.
Thank you, and bye for now.
Goodbye.